Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about being productive, which is, of course, a very good thing. But we're going to ask, yes, we are. You're all right. There's so many people that are like, yes, we're already answering your question. Uh-huh. It's true. I'm going to ask the basic question, and then we're going to go from there because this show is, of course, unscripted. It goes where we take it because it's what we want to know, right? Right. So what is productivity? What is being productive within our context, within the context of negotiation, a mediation, a dispute resolution, within the context of, well, dealing with other people to get something done? Mm-hmm. So what is productivity? What is being productive within that context? Yes, I think this is true. Quite a few people, I'm going to talk about this first, are talking about it's productive when you manage to define what success is. Well, you know where you're going, for heaven's sakes. Let's define success. Let's know where it is that we're going so that we know when we get there, right? Yeah. Define success. To be able to do that is very productive and one of the first steps we need to do. Mm-hmm. A lot of folk are talking about creating a mission statement, right? We'll talk about that and creating a timeline, which oftentimes go hand in hand with a mission statement. Sometimes it's called a statement of goals, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're called different things, but they're really what we intend to do, right? A timeline. Going forward, a lot of people, this is a funny thing to say, but it's true. A lot of folks are talking about being productive by going forward incrementally. That's not by leaps and bounds, folks. That is by steady progress. Yeah, incrementally. We're getting there. We're getting there at kind of a creeping pace, but we're getting there. And, you know, sometimes going not so fast, it's a mighty fine thing because it lets everybody think. Everybody have a moment to catch their breath and go, oh, yeah, we're making it. We're getting there. Mm-hmm. And to go with that, we're going to go with reaching agreement, right, step by step. That's incrementally in its way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about talking about creating empathy, which is a productive act? Remember that empathy is not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding. Empathy is not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding. Mm-hmm. This is a productive act, too. Oh, I so agree with you. Quite a few people are talking about not needing to enforce the civility rules anymore is productive. Yes, thank you. Because sometimes you need to act like a referee, and if everybody's gotten the picture and we are going to work together and get this done, and you don't have to keep talking about the civility rules and enforcing them, well, we've moved a big step in the right direction. That's extremely productive, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Being productive has to do with employer buy-in, right? Backing, support. In this show, I always use the word employer very, very loosely. I refer to, as an employer, anybody that had the brains to bring us in, that is the person that asked us to be the leader, the person that brought us in to handle this, right? I call, it might be a group, might be an organization. I call that which brought us in the employer. It's just a generic term that I use because there's lots of different legal and practical ways to think about who it is that we are, in a sense, reporting back to, who might be paying us, who is the person who, well, is kind of the employer, the group, the board, whoever it is. I call them all employer, even though that might not technically be the relationship, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So they need buy-in. They need to back us up. Our participants need buy-in too, right? They have to have enthusiasm. They have to really be willing to work. They have to really do it. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the media, right? Media support is productivity, is productive. And it brings maybe even community support. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about that and community outreach. Who we're going to talk to, who we're going to reach out to, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Okay, now that we've decided the, oh my goodness, we've got 11 areas, the areas that we're going to talk about, let's start, because we're practical people. One of the ways to be productive, right, with the first one we're going to talk about, is to define success. People talk about success as a thing that you work towards. But what is it? What is it in this specific case, in this specific instance, with these specific people in these specific circumstances? Yeah, let's define what it is that we're working towards, what it is that we want, right? Well, how are we going to know it when we get it if we don't define it, if we don't know what it is? Right? Right. Very important. You need to define success. Now, the question now becomes, and yes, a lot of people are asking it, who defines it? Well, that's what you have to decide, right? Did your employer define success? Remember, employers being used very loosely. Is that who's defining what we want done and what the outcome should be, which is success, right? Did they do it reasonably, clearly? Did they appropriately fund it? Remember, these things take some funds, some money. Did they set parameters, right? And the main question that we're going to ask is, how flexible is that definition? Because sometimes they are really not flexible. And that's a bad idea. It has to do with, we need you to do it at a certain date. Well, why? Right? And we're going to talk about timelines later on. Mm-hmm. If it's not the employer that defines success, or maybe they've given a general idea of what they want, but what they really want is they want to have you tell them what success looks like, then are we going to do it with the group? Are we going to discuss it? Are we going to vote on it? Are we going to think about it? Are we going to decide what success looks like, right? And how are we going to do that? How are we going to make that kind of a decision? Yeah. How are we going to know when we've got success? We might have to discuss that and reach consensus, right? And maybe it should be success for our immediate issues, maybe not success for the entire thing, right? We might be going step by step. We might have some work to do ahead of time, right? Yeah. You're going to vote for the leader defining success. Maybe. That's a decision that you have to think about. There's several reasons why you have to think about it. You have to think about whether it's appropriate. And this is the kind of group that wants the leader to tell them what success looks like. Because some groups are. Some corporate cultures are like that. Remember, we always have to look towards the corporate culture. Right? Mm-hmm. This is true, too. Muhammad and others are saying that some cultures, some actual ethnic cultures, some areas in the world have predispositions to what the leader does, right? Now, in the United States, we tend to be consensus builders, right? Yeah. But that might not even be true in the U.S. I've worked with some organizations, some corporations, where there's a corporate culture where the leader tells the participants what to do specifically and expects them to follow it. And we're not talking about the military, but it is kind of like the military, isn't it? You're my soldiers. I expect you to follow what I tell you to do and come up with options, come up with solutions, come up with product, right? Productivity. Mm-hmm. It is a way of doing things. Mm-hmm. You have to know that that's what they want you to do, and you have to know about your liability for doing it, at least in the United States. There's some liability issues sometimes with that. And that needs to be under contract. That needs to be something that is designated, that the leader will decide what we're going to do and will tell everyone what their role in that is. Right? Yeah. Because that is taking on the full responsibility. Now, maybe that's good. Yeah, that's true, too. Mohammed says that it's more effective. That's true. Because we have experience, because we have intelligence, because we are people of good sense, and it is more effective, and it's faster, for sure. But you have to have buy-in from your participants that they will be led like that, that they will take orders, that they will just do it and not ask a bunch of questions, right? And not balk and talk amongst themselves. So you have to do it. You have to think about that. You have to think about all the parameters of that. Mm-hmm. People are asking not only who defines it, but how you define success. I think, well, yeah, people are saying step by step. I do like that. I do think that success, oftentimes there's an overall statement of what success, what we want. There's nothing wrong with that, but how we get to it may be more circuitous, maybe more not exactly immediately. Does that make sense? Yeah, because it's not always a straight line. It's not always a path. So we're going to define it maybe narrowly. I do like to define it in narrow steps, because then when we go faster and we surpass them, I look like a genius. And that's really the truth. It's like, oh, my God, Sue managed to get us to the end in record time. Yes, I did. Yeah, so there's a certain amount of marketing that goes with that, isn't there? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true, too. Hussein and others are saying that if you're going to define success, and whether the leader does it, the group does it, the employer does it, whatever, you have to have some sort of a process in case circumstances change. Because oftentimes they do. You have to have a process for change to accommodate the fact that circumstances have changed, that we're going to need to take another look at that. We're going to need to maybe do it more narrowly. We're going to need to really decide whether or not that is going to work, right? We may need to modify. And that's not a sin, and that is not going backwards or failing. That's just how life works. Sometimes as you get into something, you say, oh, wow, didn't think about that part. We're going to need to reconsider at least this portion of it, right? Yeah. And that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing at all. That's a life thing. Things happen, right? Right. So circumstances do change, which changes the definition of success at this point in time. Mm-hmm. We may go for a bigger definition, but at this point in time, we're going to change our definition. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to the mission statement. A lot of people like a mission statement, in this group especially, I think. I think a mission statement is valid if you need it. I'm going to make that caveat because sometimes the mission is clear and we're all in accord. We all know what it is that we want. It's pretty darn obvious. I don't think those kinds of groups need a mission statement because it takes a while to make one. And I do think that there's a certain amount of busy work to it because people argue about each word and like that. Now, maybe that's a group building experience. You're all voting for that. Quite a few people are voting for the process being one of the first group building experiences to establish the group dynamic. I can accept that if that's the purpose. If the purpose is to get us all in agreement, the purpose is to get us all talking to each other, the purpose is to really get something under our belt that's a success. We've made a mission statement. We're going forward with it. Go. That is fabulous. Yes. It's important. It's something that needs to be done so that we can go forward. Mm-hmm. So that's fabulous. So it's a group activity. If it's just kind of because you always do it, make sure it's not a busy work activity that kind of makes people feel discouraged because they're arguing about each word and they're not creating a good group dynamic. You got to decide that as a leader. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting point. Erica says that sometimes a mission statement is an advertising point. It goes like on publications and ads and things. It's something that you say. If that's true. And I've just seen this done for an organization that I belong to. They made a mission statement, and then they made print pamphlets, I'm going to call it. It's better than that, but just you get the picture. And because they wanted the mission statement to be one of the headlines on it so that people understood what they were doing. Right? Yeah. And I think that's fabulous. So if it's got a real, if there's a mission statement, if there's a point to it, an actual practical point, this is why we're doing it, I think it's a real good idea. If it's just so that we can have one, what's the point, right? It has to have, there has to be a pragmatic reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is really true too. Yeah, Suki says if it's too broad, it's useless. If it's too narrow, it needs flexibility. That's the tricky part. Most groups make a fairly broad mission statement, right? That leaves some room for interpretation. It's why they don't have, they're useful, not exactly as guides, but as group dynamic creators. As something to look back to, you know what I mean? They're not so much, I guess, on an advertising thing, but it's still, because each person that reads the advertising with the mission statement on it will interpret that statement differently according to their own self, right? Yeah, because what someone once explained to me, you read with your own voice. This is true. You read with your own voice. You read with your own thought, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Zoe and others are saying that the process of making the mission statement is anchoring. Yes, it leads to more of a cohesive group. If that is true, then the answer is that mission statement is a fabulous idea. The next thing that we're going to talk about is timelines. They often go with a mission statement. They kind of seem to go hand in hand. Just like mission statements, I think they should have a purpose. Pardon me. Shows it's a live show. Oh, now you'll excuse me. I'm going to actually blow my nose on live radio. Just hang on 1 second because I sneezed and I can't go forward. Hang on. Oh. my. Hello, I'm back. Isn't that nice? A lot of people said bless you and like that because thank you very much. Because I actually sneezed. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for thinking about me like that. How nice. Okay, we're on timeline. I think about it just like I think about the mission statement. If the timeline has a use, we should do it. Now, some things definitely need a timeline. Yes, exactly. Things that have an actual drop dead, gotta do it by a certain date, need a timeline, right? Right. You need to know when it is that you have to get something done by. Oh, pardon me. Your timeline, in that respect, keeps track. Very important. Yes, people are asking for an example. The best one is if you need to get something on a ballot, for example, that needs to be voted on. The government has actually set filing requirements. Courts have that, and there are lots of places have that. You have to get something in by a certain date, by a certain time, to be considered, right? It might be a grant. It might be getting something on the ballot. It might be a regulation. For some reason, you need to get something done by a certain date that is set by law. Mm-hmm. Hey, you need to keep track of that. Very important. In fact, it's one of the things that your fabulous administrative assistant, which I hope you have, keeps track of also. Because you need some lead time for it, too. Because you need some filing time. You need some putting it together time. It shouldn't be something that suddenly jumps out on your calendar and goes, hi, in 23 minutes you need to file this. You know, oh, my God. No, you need to put it down in advance, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the ticket. George says that if you don't have actual requirements, then a timeline is kind of limiting, right? I'm going to ask who made the timeline. If you made it yourselves, then what was the purpose? Was it to keep everybody turning in their stuff promptly? Well, maybe that's important, because it is important to really keep going and keep going forward. And if a team has something that needs to be reported to the whole, for example, they have to have it in by a certain date, because we're all going to get it in by a certain date. Because we're all going to look at it, and we're all going to do it, right? And therefore, and then you won't have one topic lagging because the people didn't get it done. No, 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 no. We want to be able to really go forward and say, look, this is what we are. We need it in by then, and then we're going to have our report, for example. Yeah. Did your employer, remember we're using it loosely, set the timeline? I want you to have this done by this date. The answer is why. What is the significance of that date? Is it real? Is there a reason for it? Sometimes there is. I mean, we're going for a grant, and we have to have stuff in, the information in, so that we can, pardon me, so that we can go forward. Oh, now I'm going to take a sip of water. No, I don't seem to be sick. It's just one of those things, if you know what I mean. Oh, I think I need to dust. This is a good point, too. Elizabeth and others are saying that the key to a timeline is if you keep moving it back, if you keep making a line and then going, well, we didn't make it, I guess that's okay, we'll take another 2 weeks, well, your timeline is meaningless because everyone knows they don't have to make it. There needs to be, I don't like to use the word penalty, but there needs to be a penalty for not making the timeline. You don't want to have penalties and stuff like that unless you need to. It doesn't add to the graciousness of the group dynamic. Let's just put it that way. Mm-hmm. And if you keep needing to push it back because the timeline is kind of false, Get rid of it. It's meaningless. You're not making it anyway. It was a suggestion. And we've gone beyond that suggestion, right? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about progress being incremental. Being kind of slow and inching forward is the key to the word incremental. Yeah, kind of, oh, this is taking a while. Mm-hmm. I suppose this is true, too. Thomas and others are saying that progress, in fact, Thomas is saying this, is not always in a forward direction. You have to kind of watch for that. Sometimes it looks like you've got movement, and you do, but you're moving in a circle. You're not getting done with the issues and going forward. You're just circling around with the same arguments, the same issues. We need to make a decision and move forward, right? Even if it's slow, even if it's incremental, even if it's step by step, which is our next one, right? Yeah. A lot of people asking who decides the speed of progress. I think circumstances do. I think the group does. I think, well, yeah. A lot of you are voting for the leader decides. I think that's true. That's why we're the leader, isn't it? To keep things moving, to keep things chugging along. Even if it's going kind of slow, sometimes things can't help going a little slow. But you got to keep them moving forward, right? Yeah. And yes, because progress should be in a forward direction. And as leader, you've got to sit down and think about whether or not you really are kind of circling around. And this is not exactly what you had in mind, right? Uh-huh. Are we going forward? Are we improving? Are we getting this done? Or is it kind of just spinning wheels, right? That's kind of an Americanism. But we all understand it means we're not, we seem to be moving, but we're not. We're just spinning our wheels, just kind of doing something that's not getting us anywhere. That's why we're the leader, to push it forward, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess in a sense the leader decides the speed. I think we've just decided that, haven't we? Mm-hmm. Yes. People are asking about, you know how you sometimes make teams and split the group up because we've got a lot of stuff to do and a lot of research or whatever. And sometimes the team, when it comes to report, they say they don't have anything to report. That is not true. They need to tell you what they're doing to get to something to report. Does that make sense, right? Yeah, they need to give a report on their progress, on their heading, their path to productivity, right? Their path to getting it done. Not we have nothing to report, because that's not possible. You've been working on it. You just haven't gotten any conclusions yet. But we want to know how the process is going. At least I do as leader. Mm-hmm. Which leads us to the concept of step by step, right? This is the truth. Adam says that leaps cannot be replicated. That goes to incremental and also incremental step by step. Leaps in progress cannot be replicated. Leaps in productivity cannot be replicated. Sometimes something really goes well. And you really make an interesting contact. You really work your way forward and you have a leap forward, which is incredibly impressive. But you shouldn't depend on that being how the process is going to go. And you should let people understand that they cannot depend on it being how the process is going to go. The process takes a while, usually. Yes, if you're going to estimate how long, because sometimes employers want to know that, I always estimate big, long, which is, how come I get my stellar reputation for getting things done on time and under budget and maybe even under time, right? Because I estimated big. I estimate big money-wise, too, if we're being funded. Because then I won't have to come back and ask for more, right? And if we have some leftover, that's a miracle. That's fabulous. Yeah, that's a mighty good thing. Mm-hmm. Yes. So we all go forward like that, and we need time to make it step by step and replicate and replicatable. And if you have a leap forward, that's fabulous, but it's kind of an unusual thing, and everyone should know it. Until the next one, of course. Mm-hmm. Because you always take the next logical step in step by step. This is the next thing that needs to be done in a progression, right? Mm-hmm. People are talking about reporting. Yes, a lot of times one of the things that tracks productivity is kind of frequent reports. Not necessarily even tremendously formal ones, as in written, but some sort of reporting back as to what's being done, how we're progressing, how we're getting closer to the defined success, and whether or not we need to revisit what that is, right? Yes. And also sometimes we need new funding. This is true too. Quite a few people are talking about funding. Funding kind of needs a proof of productivity usually, because whoever's funding it likes to know we're getting somewhere. Pardon me. Especially if they are funding like research or something like that with a defined outcome. Well, I've already put a lot of money in. How are we doing on productivity? How are we doing on success and results? You see, so that would be something for a report, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as we go forward, as we progress in our productivity, we're going to get some empathy going, because it'll help a lot. We can't be productive together if we can't work together. That's a plain, ordinary statement of fact. That's not an opinion. We cannot be productive together if we really can't work with each other. And in order to work with each other, we're going to need some empathy. And remember that empathy is not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding. Empathy is not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding. And one of the ways to gain empathy, yes, is to ask some open-ended questions. Yes, because you want to know stuff, because you want to get understanding. And not the understanding that you have projected onto someone or something, real understanding from their perspective, right? Yeah. And so we are going to ask open-ended questions. The recipe for peace now, we refer to them as the 5W questions. Yeah, the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why? Who, what, where, when, and why? Do we ask these all at once? No, not necessarily. Maybe. That's a leadership call. Depends on the conversation. Do we ask them in front of everybody? Depends. That's a leadership call. I tend not to, if we're having some disagreement, I like to iron it out first and then ask the questions in front of everybody, right? Do we ask them all at once and in that order? Not necessarily. You pull them out when you need them. Who, what, where, when, and why? Who told you that? What did they say? Where did you hear it? When was this told to you? And why do you have that response? Asked in a more gracious manner, of course, because we are models of the civility rules, which means that we are exceptionally gracious people in dealing with others and with ourselves, too. Yes, empathy, this understanding, also extends to what Recipe for Peace now calls the invisible participants. The people who your actual participants are talking to. Are they reporting to them? Kinda. but not necessarily in a formal manner. That's kind of a strange thing to say, but sometimes there are people who your participants really, really want the approval of. And they're telling them about the process as we go on. And they're telling them in a personal manner, which means it's somewhat of an interpretation, right? I don't like to call it a bias, but, well, kind of. I'm going to take a sip. Hang on a second. Goodness, my voice is going, isn't it? And so we call them the invisible participants because they're having an impact. Their opinion counts very much, but they're not actually sitting there. They're not actually participating. I like to extend an invitation to them. I like to know about them, and I like to ask them to participate, to come, to listen, to give us their fabulous opinion, right? So that we can listen and gain empathy and understanding. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the reason why they're invisible is because they wish to remain anonymous. They'd like to help. They have an interest. They think that something is a basic unfairness, for example, but they don't really want to be the person that puts themselves out by name until they figure out which way the wind is going, right? Until they figure out if that's a good thing or a bad thing and whether we're going to win, whether we're going to have success. Because usually, because they have something to lose, people are asking why. Usually they have something to lose. They are, for example, in some sort of a business position where the status quo is what they do, is what they are, right? And they really, really don't want it to be known that they have an interest in something. Mm-hmm. That they are helping in some way. They don't want anybody to know, right? My computer is acting strangely. Oh, well, we're going to ignore it because that's what we're going to do at the moment. It decided to scan itself. Isn't that the weirdest thing? Yeah, I know to click closed. Not responding. Close the program. You might lose information. We're going to take a chance. I might lose you. Cancel this. Are y'all still there? I've got a window that popped up on my screen that said my computer decided to scan itself. Hello, you're still there, right? Yeah, everybody's still there, fabulous. I hate it when it does that, because it's always weird. Uh-huh. It's kind of like, oh, what are you doing? Do not have little illnesses while I'm online, while I'm on live on the air. Hello. So, yes, invite the invisible participants in. If they wish to remain anonymous, but they would like to help, you must keep your word and not say who they are. Because if someone goes to you in confidence and says, this is what I'm doing, this is how I'd like to help you, but I don't want anybody to know, say yes, we would love to hear your side of it, your opinion. Tell us what kind of unintended consequences we're about to have, for example, because you know what they are. You have a great deal of experience. And I respect that you don't want to be named. I will not tell anyone. Do not tell anyone. Do not do the little, I'm going to tell you this even though it's a secret thing. No, it means that you're incredibly unreliable. And the person that you tell that to, even if they don't tell because it's a secret, they'll remember that you can't keep a secret, right? Well, that's no good. That goes to your reputation. For heaven's sakes, don't breach your reputation by being unethical in that way. I think that's unethical. Mm-hmm. Let's extend empathy also to our opposition, right? So that we understand how come they think not, even if we think it's idiotic. But they have a reason. Let's find out what it is. Maybe we're not really so far away as we seem. How's that? Maybe our opposition is not as opposed as it seems that they are. Let's think about that for a minute. That might be okay. Maybe we are in line. Maybe we want the same outcome for different reasons. And it seems like we're opposition, but we are not. We are on the same side. This is an interesting statement. I kind of like it. Stephanie and others are saying you should also extend empathy to ourselves as leader so that we understand what we're doing. Understand our who, what, where, when, and why. I like to take the very careful count of whether or not I've got some sort of preconceived notion about things and it's affecting the group. Hang on a second. Like my lack of voice is affecting this program. You got to keep track of yourself. Got to really think about whether or not something about your leadership is not very understanding, right? Have you taken a side accidentally? You think one is so much better than the other and like that? No. It is not your job to take a side. You are the impartial third party. Or it's your job to get the sides together. Mm-hmm. Even if you secretly in your heart think that one of them is better than the other, more doable, for example. No, we will not take sides. Mm-hmm. We will extend empathy to everyone, which is understanding, not agreement, right? Which leads to the civility rules. Because if you've taken sides, you are no longer a model of civility, right? And that is your job. You cannot tell people to act in a civil manner, which is really the only rule that Recipe for Peace now has, if you do not act in a civil manner. You are the example. You are the example of enthusiasm. You are the example of empathy. You are the example of civility. The civility rules say, at their very core, we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude to each other. It's basically speaking what they say. We will not bully anyone, take their turn, sigh, pass notes in class that makes other people giggle. Nowadays it's texting. You text like that and keep doing it, I actually am going to confiscate your phone for the duration of the meeting. Yeah. And if we're not actually all in the same room and I know that you're doing it, I'm going to yell, stop that. And you are, because that is against the civility rules. Mm-hmm. It is productive, once the civility rules have become internalized. It may take a little while, depending on the group. I always announce the civility rules, even if I don't think I'm going to need them with this group. I announce them. And remember to enforce immediately and fairly. Enforce immediately and fairly, right? Yes. Very important. Very important to say these are the, once you let go of civility, once you've lost it, once you've got a bullying situation, for example, no, we will not be doing that. And once you've got it, once things have become uncivil, it's very hard to get it back. You need to enforce immediately and not go, well, that's just a little infraction of the civility rules. No, people start with the little infractions and then they work their way up. I have seen this. I have never had this in one way, or maybe when I was very inexperienced, but nobody told me about the civility rules. No. You need to enforce, you need to announce and enforce immediately, consistently, and fairly, always. Even if it takes a zillion times, or at least it feels like a zillion times, right? You need to get employer backing, which is one of the things we're also going to talk about when we talk about employer buy-in, which is coming up next. Maybe we'll talk about it now. Hello. If you cannot get someone in your group to act in a civil manner. You've got a real pain, a real bully, somebody who's trying to derail the situation. I have this occasionally. Used to have it more frequently, but now I have a reputation. And I've actually had people settle when they find out that I'm on the case. But I actually see this because my specialty, if I have one, is to come into groups that have already failed and get them back on track. And sometimes, it's not my preference, but sometimes I can't help it, sometimes the leader, the prior leader who failed, is one of my participants now. He or she is still there. They actually have a human vested interest. It doesn't make them bad people. It just makes them humans. To see the thing fail, because then they can say, well, nobody could have gotten it done. I was not stupid. I just, an unwilling, a bad leader. No one, Sue couldn't get it done. Nobody could get that, to get that group to that success, that conclusion. So they have a vested interest in making it fail. What are you going to do about that? They're violating the civility rules. You need backup on it. What I'm going to call employer buy-in, which is the next topic anyhow. You need to, before you take on one of that type of group, you need to find out how much the employer, and remember we're using it loosely as a term, is going to back you up. What's the repercussion for continuous violation of the civility rule? All right, a lot of you are calling it punishment. Repercussion's a nicer word. But what's going to happen if you don't buck it up and become civil? Is the question at hand. What you gonna do about it, right? Like little children. What you gonna do about it? I don't gotta. Yes, you gotta. Because, well, we're gonna bring in the big guns who are gonna back me, right? Yeah. And I get that in by contract. I actually do. What it is that is the responsibility of the employer in this situation? What's the responsibility to my group, to my leadership? Do they need to come, perhaps? Do they need to threaten expulsion, which would usually be very bad? Because a lot of times my groups are not actually exactly voluntarily created, especially in the corporate world. They are people of a certain level in the organization who are required to go to this training, for example. Required to solve this difficulty. Required to do whatever on earth it is that they're required to do. But they need to. Yes? Mm-hmm. Let's get some backup. Let's get some employer buy-in, right? Now, sometimes we have progress and productivity, and it's certainly a more productive group if we don't have to do that and everybody has sit down and worked together. Right? They have bought into the idea and internalized, not as humans necessarily, but as a group, which is all we really care about, the idea that we're going to work together in a civil manner. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. They have respect for each other. And they even need to have respect for each other if they have different reasons for being there, but the same success goal. The ultimate goal is the same, even though they have different reasons for wanting it. Yes, the simplest example that I can think about, because I see it, is that in the United States, people are an example of that, because it's kind of a confusing thought. We have different reasons, but we want the same thing. But we're all very dissimilar from each other. We're not the same at all, right? And one of the reasons, one of the easiest examples is in the United States, marijuana is illegal, right? federally illegal. It's a big deal. And the states, well, a lot of different kinds of folks want legalization, at least for medical. It wasn't going to become federally legal. Those of you in the United States or who watch the United States news type stuff know that there's still a big fight about making it legal in the federal government. It's not coming anytime soon, in my personal opinion. It is not a scientific problem. It is an election problem, a political problem, right? Right. And the states, people decided to do something very strange. They decided to go to the state level and see if they could get it done that way. And a whole bunch of people had to work together because it had been kind of piecemeal in the federal fight. Because if the federal made it legal, it would be legal for everybody. But the state idea was a real novel concept and a real uphill battle, and it had to be put on the ballot for voters to vote for. Please note that the voters were voting for something that was federally illegal. It's extremely imaginative on the part of those who wanted it. Mm-hmm. Who's in the room? Well, a lot of different interests. And a lot of different interests representing different interests. And those people representing others don't want to lose their power. And they want to come back and they want to say, I got this for us. Because it's good, right? Right. You've got people who are the heads of different kind of organizations. Organizations that have to do with some sort of illness that marijuana would alleviate, for example. Some sort of pain that marijuana would alleviate. Some sort of aging that marijuana, you know what I mean? There was different, I don't want to call them diseases because some of them really weren't or aren't, but different kinds of stuff like that. Then you've got people that want to sell it. That's an economic interest. Grow it to sell it legally. That's an economic interest. You've got the state governments chiming in because they would like a ton of tax money. Ooh, that looks good. And a ton of new jobs because if you're going to do it legally, you've got inspection requirements, right? And a whole bunch of hoops to go through. Mm-hmm. So you've got a whole bunch of folk, yes, and then they've got people that want to produce different kinds of products. Exactly. You've got a lot of economic interest and a lot of, we would like this because it would be a help to the world type interest. You've also got some people that are kind of social scientists and they just think it would be a good thing and decriminalize it. Because it's taken a huge toll on our criminal justice system to criminalize something like marijuana, right? Right. But you've got a whole bunch of different people in the room, and they all need to have buy-in, which means that you need to model enthusiasm as the leader, model civility, because they need to be civil to each other. It doesn't matter if they like each other, right? This is not, I don't know, a dating service. This is let's get something done and get it over with, and then we won't have to deal with each other type concept. In fact, I say that to people. The faster we get this done, the faster we don't have to deal with each other. It's always a complete surprise to them. I have no idea why that is, but it's always a surprise. It's like the faster we get this done, the faster we won't have to deal with each other anymore. And then the next time issues come up, the next time things go funny and they need to work with that particular type of issue, that particular type of person, then they know who to call on. It's not because we have cured prejudice in the world. I would like to, but I'm not a fool, and I know that that doesn't happen just because we're talking to each other. What they think is, I can call up this person on these issues from this side, ethnicity, whatever the earth it is, and we can work together because this person from this group is an anomaly. You see, they still get to keep their horrible biases, But they got to work together at this point in time on these issues for this matter, right? Right, because they don't have an option. Because we're going to insist, because we need them to do it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to do that, they're going to have to be civil, and they're going to have participant buy-in, right? Yes, this is true, too. You will get, if this is true, and a lot of times it is on my groups, you will get better participant buy-in, better enthusiasm. It has to be maintained, but up front, and then, of course, we're fabulous, so they all get enthusiastic. But, excuse me. Oh, I took a sip of water. Look, one of those things where they, and now, the coming attraction. We will have better civility kind of internally and more enthusiasm, which needs to be maintained, of course. If the group is selected and it's an honor, right? I have that sometimes. Sometimes I have groups that have to come because they are a certain level. This means they'd like to keep their employment level, which has to do with enforcement, right? But sometimes it's an honor. They get chosen, and they have to compete in some way. And that makes everybody feel more important, right? And then you've got the peer opinion, the opinion of the others. They go, oh, I wish I was in that group and not in the group that I'm in. Or I wish I could participate with that. They've got a potluck, right? Yeah, it's good that way. And by the way, I think we're going to run out of time for the recipes, and I apologize. We'll do them next time. But we're having a very good discussion, aren't we? Mm-hmm. So it, to a certain extent, there's a certain amount of, I'm in Sue's group. And people go, oh, I wish I was there. Yeah, so it makes you feel important, right? And it makes you want to stick with the group and be enthusiastic. So next time I form a group, I'll go, well, this person was really good the last time, and they were a known quantity. I think they're going to be good with this one too. See, that's human nature. I pick the same people again because I can deal with them. We've already got a relationship going, right? Right. Yeah, I have human nature too. let's go quickly to media because they do affect productivity. And we've got 3 minutes, honestly. Yes, I know. I'll get the recipes done next time. Kind of maybe. But the media affects productivity because they affect community opinion, right? And we can get more done if we've got good press. And I'm using the word press loosely to encompass every kind of media. Pardon me. And it's, yes, sometimes you can get a celebrity endorsement even. Surprisingly enough, and I mean this in the nicest way, especially local celebrities, like ballplayers and things like that, sometimes they don't even particularly want to be paid. I mean, they'd like to be paid. Everybody likes to be paid. But you don't have to have a lot of funds. You could approach them and say, we're trying to get this done. Will you say something nice about us? Will you endorse it? And a lot of times if it's a good cause and they go, yeah, that seems like a really good thing and I could help. And besides, it's good for them too because especially if they're heading towards retirement, because the ones that are really, you know, up-and-comers are all pulling themselves, but you've got some that are kind of semi-retired, their career is winding down, and they would like to be important in the community, right? Or they are going for some sort of a media job, right? They want to be the sportscaster. Is that what they still call them? The announcer? Yeah, thank you. I realized the minute I had said the word sportscaster, it was like Jimmy Stewart from the 1930s. The announcer, right? Yeah, or something like that. They want to be a commentator. I don't know. They want to write a book. But they want to have a second wind, and it's good to be promoting something good in the community and be important, right? And so they're delighted. And the media loves that. Yes, and it's very productive, especially if you're fundraising, right? Right. Also, if you're going to deal with the media, We need to have a media spokesperson, right? We need to choose somebody to really be the liaison to the media and not have everybody blogging and things, because even if they're doing it in a complimentary manner, what you put down in print, and let's face it, blogging is print, right? What you put down can be interpreted incorrectly or taken out of context by opposition, right? So I have a no blogging, no texting type rule until we're done and we can all blog the same successful thing and show that we were a part of this, which is good, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. My friends, and yes, sometimes the leader is the spokesperson. We're all voting for leader being the spokesperson. Sometimes, and I don't think this about experts generally, because I think your best expert is somebody who's tried it before and hopefully succeeded, but even if they fail, they know how come, and you shouldn't do that. We should try something different. Sometimes the leader's a fabulous media spokesperson. The media is impressed by credentials, so you might want to consider an expert or maybe the celebrity to be the media spokesperson, right? Right. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you so much for all of your participation. Thank you for being here and for listening. If you want to find us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming, and please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.